It is Thursday, October 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the United States is giving Saudi Arabia more time to finish its investigation into the disappearance of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
We made clear to them that we take this matter with respect to Mr. Khashoggi very seriously.
A prominent police commander is killed in Afghanistan, and singing legend Barbara Streisand releases a single from her new album. It's all ahead. The U.S. appears willing to give Saudi Arabia more time to finish its investigation into Turkish allegations that Saudi agents killed a U.S.-based journalist inside Riyadh's consulate in Istanbul. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, after meeting with Saudi and Turkish leaders this week, briefed President Donald Trump at the White House on Thursday. He told the president to give Saudi Arabia a few more days to complete its investigation into the disappearance of the writer Jamal Khashoggi. After meeting with Trump, Pompeo spoke to the news media about his discussions with officials in Riyadh.
We made clear to them that we take this matter with respect to Mr. Khashoggi very seriously. They made clear to me that they, too, understand the serious nature of the disappearance of Mr. Khashoggi. They also assured me that they will conduct a complete, thorough investigation of all of the facts surrounding Mr. Khashoggi and that they will do so in a timely fashion. And that this report itself will be transparent for everyone to see, to ask questions about, and to inquire with respect to its thoroughness. And I told President Trump this morning that we ought to give them a few more days to complete that so that we, too, have a complete understanding of the facts surrounding that, at which point we can make decisions about how or if the United States should respond to the incident surrounding Mr. Khashoggi.
Pompeo also described his talks with Turkish officials.
When I traveled and met with President Erdogan, he talked to me about the incident. He told me that they were conducting their own investigation. We had a chance to meet with some of the team involved with that. He assured me that they would share their results with the Saudis as well. So we do believe that between these two efforts, a complete picture will emerge for what actually transpired here. And we're working towards that. We're looking forward to that wrapping up quickly, and we expect that it will be done in that way.
Meanwhile, U.S. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin said he's dropping out of next week's Saudi investment conference in Riyadh. Turkish crime scene investigators searched the home of the Saudi consul general in Istanbul Wednesday, and a pro-government newspaper published a gruesome account of the journalist's alleged slaying as his fiancée waited outside. Khashoggi left his homeland a year ago fearing retribution for his criticism of Saudi policy, and he resided in the U.S. before traveling to Turkey to get married. International Edition's Lori London spoke with Hadi Amir, visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution, who grew up in Saudi Arabia and knew Jamal Khashoggi.
First and foremost, if what is reported is true, even if a good portion of what is reported is true, it's obviously in the first instance a tragedy for Jamal Khashoggi and his family. It is also, it's obviously a tragedy for journalists, but it's also a tragedy for Saudi Arabia. In many ways, Saudi Arabia has been undertaking very important, very needed, very positive reforms, allowing women the right to drive, introduction of cinemas and entertainment, modernization of the economy, building bridges with global capital markets. There's been so much good that has been done, but with that, there's been so much bad. And so while first and foremost, it's just a tragedy for Jamal and his family, it's also a tragedy for Saudi Arabia. If what is alleged is true, that he was dismembered and killed in a torturous manner, these are very un-Islamic principles. They're not given a Muslim burial. These are things that will strengthen extremists, ISIS, you know, al-Qaeda type extremists, against not only Saudi Arabia, but its allies. And who is the ally that's standing most closely to Saudi Arabia today? The United States under Donald Trump. And so the White House may not realize it, but this could be leading to grave security risks for the United States.
One concern has been raised quite a bit is the president appearing comfortable in this situation and others in downplaying concerns about human rights abuses and not really talking much about the U.S. moral leadership that we have seen in the past and that we've come to understand as sort of our responsibility.
You know, I'm 50 years old now, but as a child growing up, by the way, both in the United States and in Saudi Arabia, you know, I can say that the role of the United States has always been, in my mind, I was always proud to be an American, not because of everything that we did, because we made so many mistakes, but because we saw ourselves as trying to be the city on the hill, the shining light, the beacon for democracy and freedom. And when we stop being that, when we abdicate our role of moral leadership, it engenders bad behavior around the world. And even more than that, when our president, Donald Trump, turns a blind eye to Russia's killing of journalists, potentially this crime that we're still continuing to learn more about, it only will embolden more bad behavior from others. And it's just so tragic. There's been no evidence to the contrary. Every leaked story, every bit of circumstantial evidence points in one direction. And the government of Saudi Arabia has been unable to put forward any countervailing facts. Again, first and foremost, this is tragic on a human level. Jamal was a man who, for many years, was a loyal supporter of Saudi Arabia, but over the years wanted to see more and more reform take place at a faster pace than he was seeing it. And it got to a point where he felt he needed to leave the country and write from a perch in the United States. He's not some radical. He was not some anti-Saudi campaigner. He was a loyal citizen who just wanted to see reforms take place at a faster pace. And if what is alleged is true, then what is clear is that the Saudi leadership wanted to send a chilling message to dissidents at home that don't you dare raise your voice. We will set the pace of reform. So with that, they succeeded in doing that. So imagine that you are a domestic reformer in Saudi Arabia. When you see this happen to a Washington resident, a Washington Post reporter, what do you think is going to happen to you? So it already sent chills, I think, through the hearts of many in Saudi Arabia.
Hadi Amir, visiting fellow at the Brookings Institution. He spoke with International Edition's Lori London. The Washington Post published a column by Khashoggi, it said it received after he was reported missing, in which he pointed to the muted international response to ongoing abuses against journalists by governments in the Middle East. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. President Trump threatens to close the U.S.-Mexico border over a migrant caravan that is approaching. A Vietnamese blogger known as Mother Mushroom arrives in the U.S. after 2 years in prison. Russian authorities are searching Crimea for a possible accomplice in a mass shooting. And U.S. and Chinese defense chiefs meet in an effort to improve ties. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOANews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Mercury is the smallest planet in our solar system. Among the inner planets, which also includes Venus, Earth, and Mars, Mercury is the least explored. Technicians at Europe's spaceport in French Guiana are readying the BepiColombo mission for launch to Mercury on October 20th. The mission, a joint effort between the European Space Agency and the Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, will send two orbiters, or one from each space agency, to circle and explore Mercury. Beginning in 2021, BepiColombo is expected to conduct six flybys of the planet until the two spacecraft separate and enter into Mercury's orbit in 2025. Officials at the space agency say that the 2 to 3 year mission will expand on some of the discoveries made by NASA's Messenger mission, which orbited the planet between 2011 and 2015. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the UN Syria envoy announces his intention to resign. Two top officials in southern Afghanistan, including powerful police commander General Abdul Razak, have been killed in a shooting incident during a visit of the top U.S. general in Afghanistan. American General Scott Miller was unharmed. He was visiting the Kandahar governor's compound for a meeting with the governor and other provincial officials. In addition to Razak, who had survived several previous Taliban attacks on his life, Thursday's assault killed the provincial intelligence chief and badly wounded the Kandahar governor. Earlier reports that the governor was killed. The Taliban claim responsibility, saying an infiltrator carried out the attack that was aimed at both Razak and the American general. VOA correspondent Aisha Tanzim in Kabul tells me about the deadly assault.
It took place in Kandahar, and what we know so far is that General Scott Miller, who is the top U.S. general in Afghanistan leading the U.S. and NATO forces, was in Kandahar for a high-level meeting with provincial officials, including the governor. And they were in the governor's compound, and when they were coming out of the meeting and going towards the helipad is when the shooting occurred. Now, the NATO spokesman has said that initial reports suggest it was an Afghan-on-Afghan attack, which indicates that somebody from maybe their own security contingent opened fire. The NATO spokesman also said that the attacker is dead and the area was secure and the American general was unharmed, but two American personnel were wounded and had been medically evacuated. Now, General Razak in this attack is killed, and he was a very influential man in southern Afghanistan. Some people might argue that he was one of the most influential and rich people of the area. People called him the secret kingmaker of southern Afghanistan. He was also the commander who had put, by some accounts and in the words of some people, fear in the hearts of Taliban. So he had secured Kandahar at a time when other provinces in Afghanistan are facing serious security threat. So his death would be a huge blow to the security situation in the area as well. And it will have impact on local politics because he was very influential in local politics.
Now, apparently General Razak had survived previous assassination attempts?
Yes, there had been several attempts on his life by the Taliban. He and the Taliban had been fighting each other for years. He became the commander of Kandahar police back in, I think, 2011. And since then, he had worked very hard to secure not just the main cities in Kandahar province, but also the outskirts of the cities and far-flung areas, which is in Afghanistan not very common. A lot of times you have secure cities, but you drive 1 hour outside the city and the areas under Taliban influence or control. So he had been at war with the Taliban for years.
This occurs as it seems that the general security situation in Afghanistan and in Kabul, where you are, has been in decline.
Yes, it has. And the Taliban, year after year, have been gaining ground and, you know, have been carrying out bigger and bigger attacks, including attacks inside cities like Kabul. And, you know, the last few big battles they had, like the one in Ghazni, hundreds of people died from both sides and, you know, a lot of civilians were impacted. This also occurs at a time when Afghanistan is ready to host a parliamentary election 2 days from now. So Saturday is the day when Afghans go to vote to choose their representative for parliament. And that is an event that the Afghan Taliban have already announced they're going to try and derail. And they've already told their followers to attack any election-related activities. So everybody's on guard and literally watching out, you know, on pins and needles to see what happens in the next 2 days in Afghanistan.
VOA correspondent Aisha Tanzim reporting from Kabul, Afghanistan. UN Syria envoy Staffan de Mistura has announced his intention to step down from his post at the end of November, insisting it is for purely personal reasons.
I work for the UN, and I've been working for the UN now 48 years in 22 wars or missions in conflict area. I've learned one thing, and I know the Secretary General feels very strongly like this. What matters is winning the peace. And therefore, it is so important to make sure that what we talk about, the political process, takes place. The alternative would be territorial gains, but no sustainable peace.
De Mistura said this week he hopes to be able to convene a committee of experts, partially selected by Damascus, the opposition, and the UN to draw up a post-war constitution. Meanwhile, U.S. Syria envoy James Jeffrey said Wednesday some but not all militants have withdrawn from a Russian-Turkish demilitarized zone in Idlib province as part of an arrangement to avert a massive pro-government assault on the last major rebel stronghold. He said by all accounts, all heavy weapons have been withdrawn with an estimated 7,000 to 10,000 hardliners still in the 15 to 20 kilometer wide buffer zone. He described the 7-year civil war as essentially frozen. Alam Payan, director of the Middle East Studies Center at Ohio State University, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty he agrees with Jeffrey's assessment the buffer zone was a major step in halting the fighting.
Any kind of freezing of the hostilities, even if it is for a short period of time, is giving people some sort of optimism that there is a possibility that all sides are tired. And in conflict zones that I have studied in my 30 years, sometimes it happens and gives some sort of optimism to some groups. And then, again, something erupts.
Well, Russia, of course, is the key in this whole matter. And apparently, according to Mr. Jeffrey, it appears that Russia is okay with the status quo.
Russia wants some sort of deal to happen there. Russia knows that Bashar al-Assad cannot go forever what he wants to do. And there are many other factors involved. Turkey is a country which does not want Iran to become a very powerful country. Israel does not want that. The United States. So there are two countries which are supporting Bashar al-Assad. Especially the Iranian factor is making many other people very edgy. The only solution that which experts are thinking, there has to be some sort of political solution.
Now, with Stefan de Mistura departing, is that process going to stall out?
Yeah, there's a possibility, but some of us are thinking that probably someone else will be appointed very quickly.
De Mistura has been in his post for about 4 years. That's the longest of any of his predecessors. Why is he leaving now? He says it's for purely private reasons.
It could be a coincidence that at the same time that he's very frustrated like his predecessors, and at the same time something family might have happened. I personally believe that it's both. Bashar al-Assad wants to win the war, and Iran wants him to win the war. We are talking about 11% Alawites in Syria. This 11% cannot rule over 89% of the non-Alawites. It's not sustainable.
Some 40% of Syrian territory is still outside government control. Do you think Bashar al-Assad is prepared to cede that to other forces?
For how long Iran will continue to support Bashar al-Assad-controlled government in Syria, and for how long Russia will continue to be involved in Syria to keep him in power? Both of them probably will get tired after some time.
Is this dreadful conflict that lasted 7 years finally coming to an end in Syria, in your view?
I don't think so. 500,000 people were killed. 11 million of Syrians have become refugees in foreign countries and internally displaced. Syria will not see a peace, especially with 10 or 11 million Syrians become refugees in other countries.
Alam Payan of Ohio State University. Stefan de Mistura said he expects to return to Damascus next week to try to iron out objections to the constitutional committee raised by Syria. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is International Edition. One of the top performers in the United States has a new album. I'm joined now by VOA's Border Crossing host, Larry London.
We're dealing with an Oscar-winning songwriter, Golden Globe Award-winning director. She's an actress. She is a superstar, an American icon known to the world and loved. She is Barbara Streisand. And she is back. She hasn't retired. She just kind of takes a lot of time in between her projects. She sold over 200 million records around the world. And on November 2nd, believe it or not, Barbara Streisand is releasing a brand new album. The album is called Walls, and it's her first original songs since 2005. So you talk about a 13-year break. But it's got a new song, which we're going to play today. And it's also got a couple of versions of some old songs. She redoes Imagine, the John Lennon classic. She does What a Wonderful World and What the World Needs Now, among a bunch of original songs that she wrote and collaborated with other folks. David Foster is producing the new album. He was the winning producer of the year, a Grammy-winning producer of the year. She also worked with songwriter and Hall of Fame recipient Desmond Child. So let's check out the new single from Barbara Streisand's upcoming new album. This song is called Don't Lie to Me.
So is there a certain theme behind this new album?
Well, I'm glad you asked. In fact, there is. Barbara Streisand, who's never one to hold back her political views and thoughts about various social subjects, she said this whole album, Walls, carries a unified social theme. And it's a passionate plea. She said, with the song Don't Lie to Me, you can apply it to whatever situation you want, whatever political party you want. And she said that hopefully the music on this album shares the guiding principles and values that she herself has believed in, spoken about, and fought for her entire life and her entire career. And talking about a career that Barbara Streisand's had, she has had the most top 10 albums by a female in music history. Since 1963, her albums have topped the charts 34 times.
Wow.
And she's had 11 number one albums, 53 gold albums, 31 platinum albums. And as I mentioned, an Oscar for the musical score in Yentl in 1983. She's done it all, seen it all. And in 1977, she became the first woman to win an Oscar for composing the song Evergreen, which was the love theme to the film A Star Is Born. Last week on International Edition, we played Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper with a song from the latest version of A Star Is Born. So it kind of has gone full circle here. So Barbara Streisand's in the spotlight once again. Walls is the new album. November 2nd is the release date. And the new single's called Don't Lie to Me.
Is it known whether she will be touring following the release of this album?
That's a great question. She has stage fright. She typically doesn't like to tour and doesn't like to perform in front of large audiences. She's hosted a few televised concerts in her Santa Barbara backyard estate. But there's been no word on whether she's going to tour or not. At this point in her career, she doesn't need to tour.
Right.
So if she's, you know, hungry for the roar of the crowd, she just might consider it. And if she does, I can probably guess that it's going to be very limited dates, because that seems to be what she does. And the last time she toured was a number of years ago. It was very expensive. It was a very costly ticket, and she only did like six shows.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the story on her touring.
Were they in Las Vegas?
No, she went around the country. She did a couple international tours as well. She was very selective to where she went. And I remember she had a New Year's Eve show somewhere as well. But it was a very, very costly ticket to get in to see Barbara Streisand's concerts.
All right, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.